Welcome into the latest edition of the Naked Bootleg Podcast. I'm Evan Lazar. Alongside me, as always, Adam Kirchin of the Boston Herald. Adam, how's it going? I know you're a little sleepy today, as am I.
Yeah, I'm good. Just trying to wake up. Had a office shift last night, and just trying to wake up. But yeah, I'm ready to go.
What were you doing last night for our lovely Boston Herald there?
Just throwing up headlines and. And editing copy and stuff like that, and
the grind is what that means. Yeah, I hear you. You're just talking about off air how Marvin Bagley III, the number one recruit in the nation basketball wise and from high school, decided to declare at about 11:45 p.m. Eastern time last night. So that kept me at my job late, which was, thanks to you, Marvin. But besides that, it's going well. But let's get right into it now. So the Patriots this week joined practices with the Texans, game with Houston on Saturday. But before we get into that, let's take a look back at last Thursday night against the Jags. Kind of an ugly game all around, I would say. I don't think I've ever seen Matt Patricia look so disgusted so often in his Patriots career. What was the good and bad that you took away?
The good is I thought I think at times the offense found a real rhythm, especially when you consider for a good portion of that game, the offense was mostly backups going up against Jaguars starters for the most part. And the offense started to finally play well. I thought Garoppolo played well for the most part. Austin Carr, Jacob Hollister, those were the guys that really stood out, I think, to everyone, really. And I think you come away from that thinking, okay, all that stuff during training camp about Garoppolo struggling and all this, it sort of went away during that game. He didn't play a perfect game, but, given the context, I thought you'll take what you got from him. And he still looks like the next guy, if you want to put it that way. I think those were the positives. And then the negatives, of course, was, Cyrus Jones, and really pretty much the whole defense, I thought,
piss poor.
Was just really bad. So
agree.
Those secondary guys, not defensive backs, but just those next guys down in general, will all need to sort of step up a little bit more this week.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Jimmy Garoppolo played a pretty good game. Early on, he was a little shaky, but then he kind of settled down. That two-minute drill really settled the whole offense down at the end of the first half. Sometimes it's unbelievable, but this happens even, with the greatest of quarterbacks, that sometimes, they're kind of stagnant for the first, half, and then you get into a two-minute drill where you need to purposely speed up what you're doing and speed up the play calls and stuff like that, and you get a little bit more of a rhythm, and I thought that's what we saw with the whole offense, really. But the whole night, Garoppolo was pretty much scrambling for his life. And he did a pretty good job, I thought, of moving in the pocket. Really good pocket movement for the most part, eluding rushers, making throws under pressure, stuff like that, which is all great to see. And he's got a unique gunslinger-type sidearm throw almost that is – some people might not like, some people might, refer to it as like a Jay Cutler, which is not a compliment, but, I kind of like it. I think that it's a nice little quick release, and he kind of used it on the Austin Carr touchdown, and it's a good way to kind of change his arm angle a little bit when he's under pressure and not let the pass get affected so much by the oncoming pressure. But he was under pressure all night, and he was also, as you mentioned, throwing to the Austin Carrs and the Jacob Hollisters of the world, who had great games. Both of them did, but, they're not all pro type NFL players. So you stick him in the offense with, the starters, with the Edelmans and Gronk and Cooks and whatnot. And I think that, that would have been a 300-350 yard performance with a couple touchdowns, if that is the case. You know, a couple of other positives. I thought the running backs, Brendan Bolden and Deion Lewis, both looked really, really good. Bolden, I feel like, is almost auditioning for potentially, you know, playing on offense elsewhere if he were to not make this team. I think he probably is going to make this team. But if he doesn't, you know, he only played 16 snaps on offense last year for the Patriots, so they don't really factor him into the offense too much, I don't think. But, you know, he looked pretty good out there, you know, as a running back, you know, eluding some tacklers and making some big runs. So, you know, that was good to see. And then Deion Lewis really got that two-minute drill started, and a couple of screen passes, swing passes to him really got things rolling. So, you know, that was all good to see. Obviously, the defense as a whole was pretty lackluster. The pass rush was non-existent. They got pushed back in the run game pretty well. Yeah. Fournette basically could have dominated that game if the Jags had given him the opportunity to, I thought. And, you know, obviously, some guys like Cyrus Jones and Jordan Richards had their struggles. But at the end of the day, you know, I thought that they got a lot of really good looks at different guys that were kind of on the bubble, which I thought was important. You know, on both sides of the ball, they played a lot of guys that, you know, are fighting for roster spots, quite frankly, and they were able to get a really good look at what they could bring to the table in a game situation. And, you know, we also don't have Blake Bortles, which is positive. So, you know, that's a good takeaway. I mean, basically playing against second, third, fourth string Patriots defenders and Blake Bortles is looking more and more like, you know, his time is running out in Jacksonville.
Yeah. I think the second team offensive line was, you know, that's another thing you're looking at with Garoppolo. He was playing, especially at the beginning, with those guys against Jaguar starters who, you know, yeah, he was running for his life. He had to, you know, get the ball out of his hands. And, you know, they had some plays designed to get the ball out of his hands quickly, but other times when he had to sort of drop back and look over the field, he just didn't have time. But like you said, his ability to scramble, you know, make something happen when it's not there, find a guy downfield. He was under duress. And I think we've seen that in the past with him in these preseason games when he's playing with guys who are, you know, not quite starters, who are sort of not going to really see an NFL field unless it's, you know, garbage time. You'll see him sort of make something out of nothing. And sometimes, you know, he's just built that way for the ability to do that. And there were a couple times, I think there was one play where he was rolling out to his right towards the sideline. And I think he sort of motioned to Austin Carr, and Carr sort of made sort of a scramble play, and he just sort of dumped it off to him by the sideline. And those two had such great chemistry all night, of just making something out of nothing and making a play where there wasn't one. And, you know, it just makes you feel like, all right, well, the starters, he's really going to light it up again. You know, he's when it comes to his release, yeah, his release, I remember watching and Dino Babers was on TV, and he was his college coach, and he was talking about how fast it was, and he was calling it, you know, the fastest since Dan Marino's and all that stuff, which is all obviously hyperbole, but, you know, very quick release. So he's somebody that when he is put in a situation where he has to, you know, get rid of the ball as fast as he can, you know, he's somebody that can do that. So those are all, you know, positives for him. And I think I don't know how you can come away from that game and not feel reassured if you're a Patriots fan that this is a guy who you can depend on if Brady goes down. And then going forward, you know, something happens to Brady or whatever, the guy going forward should be Jimmy Garoppolo. If there's a way to make that happen, obviously that's a whole nother topic. Right. But you know, he's the guy.
Yeah, you know, it's one thing that you take away immediately is that the offense doesn't have to change when Jimmy Garoppolo is in the game. Now, I'm not saying Belichick goes and says that, you know, it doesn't, there's no drop off. I'm not necessarily saying that, but there's no change to the scheme. You know, the timing is still the same. The throws are all still the same. The route concepts are all still the same. And they have been the same in New England since Bill Belichick got here 17, 18 years ago. So the fact that they don't have to change anything when Garoppolo comes in the game, whereas with Brissett, they have to manage him. They have to put him in situations where he can succeed, whether it's, you know, moving the pocket or, you know, using his big arm or stuff like that. But with Garoppolo, you know, the offense more or less looks like it does when Tom Brady's under center. And that's, you know, just one reason, probably the biggest reason out of all of the reasons to keep him here long-term somehow, however you can. Because when Brady does hang him up or if Brady does get hurt, wherever the case may be, I think that they can pull it off with Garoppolo at quarterback probably better than, you know, even Matt Castle pulled it off in 2008, you know, just thinking of other examples of when Brady hasn't been available. That hasn't been often, obviously. So, you know, Matt Castle in 08 is really the best example. And as good as Castle was that season, you know, he wasn't spectacular. He also was playing with Randy Moss one season off of catching, you know, a record breaking season. So, you know, it was a combination of a bunch of things for Castle. But with Garoppolo, I truly feel that he could play and make plays from inside and outside the pocket that elevate the scheme and elevate the offense. And, you know, I think that that's not something that should be – I think it's a rare thing to find necessarily for the Patriots at this point. Obviously, Jacoby Brissett hasn't been as you know, fortunate or as good – in the same system. And, you know, I just feel like it's just would be so advantageous for the Patriots to kind of pass the torch here, you know, Montana to Steve Young style with Garoppolo. And if I was a Patriots, I would be doing whatever you can cap wise to make it work and to keep Garoppolo around. And I think that that's probably the direction that they are going to go in, because Belichick has said it time and time again that he knows the quarterback position is the most important position on the team, and having depth at the quarterback position is more important, you know, in years past when they have only carried two quarterbacks and stuff like that. This has come up a little bit, and having depth at the position I think is paramount to having depth at a lot of other positions, because if your starter goes down and you have, you know, Kellen Moore as your backup, then the whole thing falls apart if the starter is out, you know. Right. So I think that Garoppolo is a guy that the scheme doesn't change, and it's kind of a seamless transition in terms of play calling for Josh McDaniels. Obviously, Brady probably has more control on the field at the line of scrimmage and stuff like that. And, you know, Brady's the better player right now, of course. But, you know, it's just – I just think that there's so much to be said for the fact that the offense just has this seamless transition to Garoppolo in the sense of play calling and timing and scheme and all those things. But moving on from Jimmy Garoppolo talk, who decides that he doesn't like to practice but likes to play in games apparently, which is another, you know, thing that I think that Belichick is probably going to harp on with him a little bit. That's not really the Patriot way, so to speak. But moving on from that, let's look ahead to this week in Houston and the joint practices and also the game on Saturday. You know, besides the obvious names, Cyrus Jones, Jordan Richards, Adrian Waddle, who do you have, Adam, that needs to have the biggest game two or step up in game two here to get himself off the bubble?
You know, I guess I wouldn't say get off the bubble, but the guys that I'm looking for, I want to see more. I want to see Cam Fleming show more than he's done. I think the offensive tackles, you know, you know what you're going to get in Cannon, you know what you're going to get in Solder, but like we've been talking about this a little bit. What happens, you know? Who's your left tackle? It wasn't a promising sign at all last week when you had Fleming and Waddle both getting shots at left tackle, and neither one of them really looked good. So you want to see some improvement there, because you know who knows what, you know, if Solder is going to be healthy or anything like that. You know, I'm expecting Solder to be there for the beginning of the season. But it's so important because he is so much. There is such a drop off after him at left tackle. So I want to really see what's going on there. I'd like to see more consistency out of the secondary corners in terms of the like not secondary as a defensive back, but you know, like the later corners like Jonathan Jones and Justin Coleman and guys like that. I want to see more consistency out of those guys.
Jonathan Jones is an interesting one because every time he plays corner, he does not look good playing corner. He gets burned pretty consistently, especially at the line of scrimmage. You know, he's not a guy – they put him in press and – you would think with his tackling ability that he would be a physical guy, but he gets beat off the line way too easily a lot of times, and he's beat almost instantly in some of these plays. He's a liability when he plays cornerback, and when you start – I mean, he's going to make the roster as a special teamer because he's so darn good on that phase of the game, but when you start thinking about his long-term, you know, is he going to stick here long-term, it's questionable. It's dicey with the fact that he can really not play on defense right now.
Right. And Coleman didn't look great either the other night. So I have doubts whether he's going to make the team. I'd like to see if someone like Kenny Moore can step up, because he's been good in practices and stuff like that. So somebody from the secondary that isn't one of those top couple guys, I'd like to see one of them sort of grab the reins a little bit. I do want to keep another eye on these running backs. I feel like you know, Karen Grigian put out her 53-man projection, and I agree with that. She had both Lewis and Bolden making the team. I think that's possible, but I do want to watch those guys again. And I want to see a running back sort of, you know, we're probably not going to see all the guys again, but I want to see one of the running backs really push himself out there. Like, you know, I want to see Lewis, you know, sort of be that guy in terms of, you know, the elusiveness, the power when he gets the ball. The versatility. I want to see what he can do. And then, obviously, I want to really see, you know, if Austin Carr and Jacob Hollister can reprise what they did the other night.
Keep it going.
I mean, they're really going to have to. You know, Carr more than Hollister. I think Hollister has a much better chance of making the team.
Yeah, some of the early 53 men, I did one too, and some of the other ones that I've been checking out just to see what other people have going on theirs. Why is James O'Shaughnessy like such a lock to make this roster to so many people? He hasn't practiced. He just started, got back to practice yesterday, I believe. He had 2 catches for -1 yards on Kansas City last year. Obviously, he was the third tight end. He was a blocking tight end. I get all that. But he wasn't even that good of a blocking tight end necessarily. I mean, he was average, but he wasn't, you know, this incredible blocking tight end. I don't know. At that position, when you have Gronk and you have Dwayne Allen sitting at 1 and 2 on the depth chart, I would just much rather see them go young and put Hollister for now, at least, you know. Obviously, we can have a whole sample of preseason games. One of the benefits of having just one roster cut down is that we're going to get to see these guys for the entire month of August instead of just, you know, for a couple weeks necessarily. But Hollister is a guy that I just could see. Why can't he be the third tight end? Like, why does it have to be James O'Shaughnessy? Everywhere I look, it's James O'Shaughnessy.
Yeah, I don't – I forget where I've seen. I've seen a couple, I guess, with Hollister. I agree. Like, O'Shaughnessy is one of those guys that I haven't seen much of, honestly, just because he's been hurt. But with Hollister, look, the guy catches the ball the way it's supposed to be caught in terms of attacking the ball. He don't wait for the ball to come to him. He goes and gets it. And Dend, who's that good at catching the ball, and look, I understand he's not a huge guy when it comes to blocking, but he's got good blocking technique. Something I noticed when he was with Wyoming, the Gronkowski type, where he's going to overwhelm you. But he can block. I mean, he's got the technique for it. He gets his hands right where they need to be, and he can do it. He's just not an overpowering guy. But you've got two really good and Gronkowski and Dwayne Allen on the roster already. And you can really move Hollister around all over the place. And that's what they kind of did at Wyoming with him. And so I think he's really got a good shot of making the team, especially if he keeps it up. There's a different story just because there's so many guys ahead of him. But, you know, you want to just see going forward in this game guys keep doing what they're doing. And I think just based on how much I've seen them in college, just based on how much I've seen them in training camp, are sort of waned off in some of these practices before this. But he obviously was terrific in the game. You know, I don't think it's a fluke, really. You know, both of these guys have the skills.
Austin Carr is not a fluke. I mean, you know that I love Austin Carr. But to be honest with you, I mean, the guy was a Big Ten receiver of the year last year. He put up 1,200 yards and 12 touchdowns for Northwestern in a really good conference. Last year against Ohio State, he had, I think, almost 200 receiving yards in that game against 3 NFL caliber defensive backs, three of which, went in the first round of the draft last year. You know, he's going up against Malik Hooker and Gerrion Conley, and he's beating them. And those are two guys that just got picked in the top 32 picks of the NFL draft. So to come in here and say that, you know, I know you didn't say this, I'm just saying to other people, that, you know, that Austin Carr is a training camp hero, or he's a, you know, a kind of a fluky player, and you know, he's going to do well against these backups, but, you know, isn't really much other than that. I just think is a load of BS. I mean, the guy just went and dominated a really good conference in the Big Ten with some really good defenses, and he went up against some NFL caliber corners and he beat them time and time again. And you know, obviously his size, his demeanor, his measurables in terms of, you know, your combine measurables weren't off the charts, and that's why, you know, he didn't go drafted and didn't get drafted and all that stuff. But I mean, he's a guy that totally can survive at this level of football. If you can do that in the Big Ten against some of those cornerbacks at Michigan, at Ohio State, Michigan State, I don't see why he can't do that at this level.
Yeah, I think like the thing that stands out about Hollister is how he catches the ball. And the thing about Carr that stands out is how well he loses guys on these routes. His footwork is just outstanding. And you can't really – and that part of it – I mean, he's got great hands too. But just the way he runs his routes and loses guys with his footwork, it's just really fun to watch. And it's obviously not something that is that just comes around, you know, to anybody.
Right. It's not fluky. It's not fluky.
No, it's not fluky to do what he does. So he, I really think, you know, if he doesn't make the Pats, somebody's going to want that on their team. He's just going to be too good to be on the practice squad. But we'll see.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see.
The cornerback position, before I get into some of the ones that I had written down, the cornerback position is an interesting one, too. I've been going back and forth with that because, to be honest with you, I don't think they need to carry all that many cornerbacks right now. The top three guys of Gilmore, Butler, and Eric Rowe are probably going to combine to play almost every snap that they ask a cornerback to play, and barring an injury. You know, Gilmore and Butler are going to play almost 100% of the snaps on defense in 2017, barring injury. Eric Rowe will be the third corner, and he'll likely play somewhere between 60 to 70% of the snaps, depending on what, you know, what they go with in terms of their safety looks and stuff like that. So do you really need to have a ton of depth? And then you also have to remember that you can probably stash a guy like DJ Killings or Kenny Moore on the practice squad,
right,
and then promote him if you need to for an injury. I'm just thinking out loud for on a roster that has so many you know, really good battles going on right now and so many guys that are talented that they're probably going to have to let go. You know, maybe the spot where they look to save some spots is as they only carry four corners, with Jonathan Jones being the fourth and the special teams ace. And then if, you know, in a game, if somebody goes down, you know, they can then turn to Patrick Chung as the slot corner and then, you know, yeah, promote from the practice squad the next week to fill that void with a Killings or a Kenny Moore or somebody like that. I mean, in all honesty, you know, keeping a Cyrus Jones on this roster or keeping a Justin Coleman, it just doesn't seem to weigh out in terms of, you know, okay, we could give that roster spot to Harvey Lange, or we could give that roster spot to, you know, Austin Carr, Jacob Hollister, or even to like a Brandon Bolden, for example. You know,
right,
those guys I just feel like are going to bring so much more to the Patriots, not only this year, but maybe in the future for some of those younger guys, than keeping, you know, a Cyrus Jones, to be honest, you know, with Cyrus. And you know, they normally only play three cornerbacks anyway. All of last year, you go put on the tape from the Super Bowl, the only three cornerbacks that see the field are Logan Ryan, Malcolm Butler, and Eric Rowe. And even Eric Rowe is off the field sometimes because they just use Chung as a basically a third corner instead in the slot. So I just don't know if they necessarily need the numbers at cornerback. And when you try to shuffle this roster around to figure out where to fit all these guys, then I really do think that corner, unless some of these guys step up and earn a roster spot, you know, no one's really earning a roster spot there. Obviously, Cyrus Jones is not earning any roster spots. You know, Justin Coleman didn't really do himself any favors either. So I just see that spot as being one that I think that maybe they could stash somebody as depth on the practice squad and kind of give that spot to somebody else.
Yeah, I agree. I also think the defensive end position and some of these linebacker spots are going to be interesting just because I didn't really see much from the edge guys game. And so I think you're going to need to see somebody make a play from a pass rushing perspective. I thought Derek Rivers had one pressure maybe on I think it was on one of the red zone throws. But for the most part, I tweeted this out, but I watched Cam Robinson throughout, and when he went up against Grissom, when he went up against Rivers, when he went up against Ely, when he went up against Wise, when Wise was in there, none of those guys really did anything on him. I mean, Robinson's a rookie. He's a good rookie. And he pretty much handled all four of those guys. The only thing that Robinson didn't really do all that great was get to the second level when he needed to. He was a little slow with that. But that was a little bit of a concern, especially with Ely. Ely did nothing. I saw
he was on my list.
Yeah, he really didn't do anything. And it's starting to get to that point with me right now where I'm looking at it and saying, okay, he really has to show something to make this team. He's not given much positives out there. So
absolutely.
And you know, Rivers, I see flashes with Rivers, but even in the few plays that Wise was in there, I didn't see much from him. He was getting stood up a lot. You know, he plays a little tall, you know, and he didn't really do much, and it was a very small sample size. So he's eventually, I mean, I know he's got the concussion, so he probably won't play this week, but it's smart for him to stay off. But I'd like to see more from Wise, and it's beginning to be a little bit of a concern, I'd say, on who on that edge is going to bring the pass rush other than Trey Flowers, and then when Hightower comes back, you put him in that role.
Yeah. I get the concern. I think that, you know, a lot of people on Twitter, Pats fans on Twitter, are very exacerbated about this pass rush edge spot that they have, the depth that they have there. And, you know, Dwight Freeney's name has been thrown around a little bit. You know, some of these guys that are, you know, available that they could go and get veteran guys potentially, you know. I do agree that it's an area where you can be concerned. But one thing is that the Patriots don't typically tell their edge guys or their defensive ends to pin their ears back and go after the quarterback. They're not a classic sack compiling team, you know. They control rush a lot of the times, which means, you know, they like to keep the quarterback in the pocket and make the quarterback beat them from the pocket. They like to, you know, not overcommit one way or the other. Not to say that they don't, you know, tell their guys to go get some sacks, but really over the last couple of years, you know, when you think about just true sack artists that they have had on the roster, I mean, I guess you can talk Chandler Jones, but really the one I was thinking was Chris Long. You know, he's like really the only guy that they brought in here that was like a true edge, you know, even all the way out to a wide nine technique type guy that's going to come and rush the passer and really going to be more one-dimensional in that respect. You know, some of these guys, Coney Ealy is obviously a name that we would love to see, you know, take that role head on. He was on my list of guys that needed to have a big game number two because he's just shown absolutely nothing, and apparently he's shown absolutely nothing in practice also. So right now, if I was Coney Ealy, I'd be a little bit nervous because they didn't give up a ton to get him. They basically swapped picks with Carolina, and Carolina more or less handed them Coney Ealy. So if they do need to cut bait with that, it's not necessarily like they're admitting some, you know, terrible mistake of trading a second-round pick for Coney Ealy or something like that. They really traded like 20 picks, you know, in draft order position. For Coney Ealy or whatever and it ended up being. So he's not safe, I don't think. And I think that when you start to really look at it, you know, Hightower is the obvious answer to all these woes, I think. I've been saying that. But other than that, I mean, I think that you're going to see a team that's going to rely heavily defensively on the secondary right now. It's an absolutely loaded secondary. You know, it should be one of the best secondaries in the NFL. And I think that when we're getting into all these discussions about guys on the bubble and at the back end of the roster, which is all sorts of fun during training camp, we kind of forget about the starters in some respects, right? You know, the guys that we're not seeing as much, The Patriots have Malcolm Butler and Stephon Gilmore the last time that I checked, and those two guys are two of the 15 to 20 best cornerbacks in the NFL, and they're on the same team right now. So, you know, that is going to be – I feel like that's, for some reason, is like getting thrown under the table or forgotten about a little bit just because they haven't really, you know, played, obviously, yet together. Yeah. And I think we're all kind of forgetting that, you know, they have two Pro Bowl corners that they're going to be leaning on heavily to really, you know, bring it on the outside, you know, coverage-wise. So as much as it would be nice to have, you know, a real sack master, a Von Miller or, you know, someone like that off the edge, you know, I think that they're going to be okay in terms of rushing the passer just because they have a decent amount of both, you know, interior defensive linemen that I think can bring it, you know, guys like Larry Guy or Alan Branch, Uncle Phil, who's back at practice, which is great to see. And, you know, those guys I think will bring it in the middle of the defense. And then I think that they're going to rely pretty heavily on that secondary to be tight back there and make some plays. And I don't see why they wouldn't or can't. So, you know, I get the fear, but I don't think that we should quite, you know, be making trade calls or free agent calls to some of these veterans that are, you know, out there just quite yet. Another name I wanted to throw out there because really, you know, this is just a really competitive 53-man roster battle right now between a lot of guys. And Jacoby Brissett was the name. And on the surface level, you know, you see Brady aging. You see Jimmy Garoppolo, a free agent at the end of this year. It's probably unlikely that they would cut Brissett and risk, you know, going into the season and or next offseason with basically one quarterback under contract and Brady. But he did not look very good again. I didn't think he had some moments against Jacksonville, but the offense just clearly takes a step back when he gets into the game. And I just haven't seen any progression from Brissett. You know, you haven't seen any vast improvements in any way, really. You know, I don't really see the fit in the offense either. I mean, he's the guy that has a decent arm, obviously, and he's a big pocket passer, kind of a, you know, a Byron Leftwich, Ben Roethlisberger, but not as good. You know, the accuracy is just not there. Normally, when he passes the ball, he's not, like, particularly fast. I mean, you know, he's got some athleticism to him, but he's not Michael Vick out there. So, right. You know, I'm concerned about Brissett more mainly his progression. He's not really progressing or getting much better, I don't think, right now.
I think he's a little better. I think he's made some like a couple of the throws he made in that game were pretty impressive. The sort of the sideline throws he'd drop over a linebacker between a guy in the secondary where I liked a lot. I think that's a type of throw that can work for him, but it's a slow process for him. I still think he's just sort of getting used to the pro game.
The speed of the game he's definitely not there yet. You know, when you watch Garoppolo, you can tell already that he, you know, can play at that speed and play at the NFL level. I'm not so sure I'm sold that Jacoby Brissett can play at the NFL level quite yet.
Yeah, I think we'll have to wait and see on that, which is another reason, going back to Garoppolo, why, you know, he's sort of the guy. You know, I mean, you know, you can't if you're looking at this point to see if has closed the gap between him and Garoppolo enough to make Garoppolo expendable. That hasn't happened. So
right. I mean, that's what you would want to see, is that, you know, if they are going to have to part with Jimmy at the end of this year for contractual reasons, you know, you would have wanted to see Brissett just take that next step forward and kind of reassure everybody that at least as a backup to Tom Brady, maybe not the heir apparent, you know, quite yet, but as a backup to Tom Brady, he could carry the load. And I just don't see it. And I never really saw the fit in the offense, to be quite honest. I mean, I know that he has the background with Parcells and he has some Patriots ties and he's a hard worker and he's a Patriot way type guy. But I just, in terms of actually on the football field, I think he's struggled within the Patriots offense for the most part. And that Houston game, even last year, you know, obviously he won the game and they won it in blowout fashion. But if you go back and watch that game, you know, it's some really highs early on, you know, like the bootleg and stuff like that. But there's not a lot of great play. And then it carries over into the Buffalo game where he was just an absolute disaster. And I know he was only a rookie playing, you know, in the third and fourth game of the season in his rookie year. But the point is that, you know, it just the whole game just looks too fast for him right now. And I just don't know if when you break it down, you know, like I said, he's going to be on this team because of the situation that they have currently, a quarterback, a 40-year-old starter, and then the backup, you know, on the last year of his contract. But there's going to be some good football players that aren't going to make this team because Jacoby Brissett is going to make this team.
Right.
And that is just if it's going to happen, then he needs to at least – to me, prove that he deserves to be on the team and isn't just there because he's another arm.
Right.
You know, if they're going to cut a guy like a Brandon Bolden, or if they're going to cut a guy like an Austin Carr, if they're going to have to cut a guy like Shea McClellan, maybe, all these names, you know, that you can throw out, veterans and young guys that they're kind of promising rookies or whatever, they're going to have to cut a bunch of these position players to keep Jacoby Brissett on this team, mainly because they don't know what Garoppolo or Brady's future is 100% right now. And that means that, in my estimation, that Jacoby Brissett needs to prove that he deserves to be on the team first and foremost.
And they could have had Dak Prescott. That's just not
forget oh, that. Man.
And so, but one,
of course, you had to say that, you know, like, oh yeah, the hindsight on that one is,
yeah, of course. But just to circle back to the pass rush discussion, I think the Patriots, that point is well made, that the Patriots don't always, they're not an all out send their edge guys, but, you know, towards the latter part of last year, their sack totals went up. And I think that's when the defense really caught fire. So I think it is important to be able to generate a pass rush from the edge. When you look back at when Sheard was playing well, when Ninkovich, Chandler Jones, when all those guys really killing it from an edge perspective, it added another just element to that defense. It sort of pushes it towards another level. So I feel like, you know, you really do need at least something from these ends. I feel like Trey Flowers is going to give them that this year. I feel like Trey Flowers is a 10 to 12 type sack guy this year. It would be good to see another guy step up and be that. And like I said, I wouldn't think it's some huge concern about that. I do think, though, it is worth keeping an eye on. You want to be able to get some pressure on the quarterback, because for as good as the secondary is, and it will be good, you don't want these guys covering for 8 seconds.
Or, yeah, absolutely.
Isolation, but you want some pressure. And but like you said, the interior guys, I feel like, are going to be able to produce at least some pressure. That is something to watch. You know, I want to see who else on this defensive line, other than Flowers, is going to be a consistent producer of pressure, because I do feel like that is important.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I think that, you know, anybody can tell you that pressure on the quarterback is first and maybe the most important thing out of everything defensively, because it makes the whole thing run. You get pressure on the quarterback, it makes the job on the guys covering obviously significantly easier, and it also creates plays. If you don't get pressure on the quarterback, turnovers usually don't come either, because you know the quarterback has time to look around and make safer throws. So that the pass rush is key, and I think that it's not so much necessarily that I don't think that it's important or anything like that. I just kind of expect that a guy like a Kony Ealy, like a Harvey Lange, Derek Rivers, or Wise, one of those four guys I would anticipate is going to have a breakout at some point in this season. I want to put my money on Derek Rivers. I hope that it's Derek Rivers. But right now the game looks a little bit fast for him at the moment, which is to be expected. I think that one of those guys is going to emerge on the other side of Trey Flowers as a pass rush threat. And then I think that they're going to rely pretty heavily on guys like Larry Guy and Alan Branch and Malcolm Brown to provide pressure up the middle and push the pocket that way and make it easier on those edge guys to get to the quarterback by pushing him one way or the other. So I agree that, it's a concern. Obviously we all agree that we're splitting hairs here with this Patriots team and any discussion really. But I think it's something to monitor, but I really think that they have four guys on the roster right now where they only really need one or two of them to step up. And one of those four, I think is going to do it. And hopefully another one will as well. Another name, quickly here that I wrote down as well was Devin Lucien, who was kind of the training camp, buzz name that was coming out of training camp. Great hands, creating separation left and right, stuff like that. One catch for 17 yards on 5 targets against the Jags. And, he needs to have a really, really good preseason to make this roster, unworldly preseason to make this roster. And, one catch for 17 yards in the first preseason game is definitely not going to cut it.
No, I didn't see much from him that game. I thought that deep ball that where he was back there with two other guys and the ball was sort of misthrown, but he didn't really make a great play on it either. It's not like he went all out to catch it. It didn't seem to me. And I felt that was sort of a bad look there. I think he wasn't getting as open as somebody like Austin. He was running different types of routes. A lot of times he was just going deeper. And those are lower percentage throws. So, in that respect, you could sort of understand. But, I mean, if you're looking between him and Carr, who do you favor right now? It's obviously Austin Carr. So he would have to have a game where he sort of balances that back out, where he sort of outplays Carr. But at this point, I don't see him making the team. It's just too stacked of a roster at that position. And I think if he's on the practice squad, I'm not sure somebody would just snatch him up right away. I think he can be there.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that he's, he's the buzz about him coming out of training camp is one thing, but these other teams, unless he's showing something in these joint practices with Jacksonville and Houston, these other teams are not going to look too much into the media or Patriots coaches or whatever it may be pumping out stuff about Devin Lucien being, a freak in practice or whatever. If they don't see it in the game or they don't see it in these joint practices, then I think that he could be there absolutely as a practice squad option. I wanted to discuss one thing with you. So I did my 53-man roster projection. Hadn't done one since the draft, so I re-updated it after the first game. And got some feedback, some good, some bad, obviously. And some of the bad was that, there wasn't enough the veterans such as Brandon Bolden, Shane McClellan, James O'Shaughnessy, these guys people think are you know, on this roster 100%. And to me, I wanted to ask you about this. I would much rather see them give Shane McClellan's spot to Harvey Lange. I'd much rather see them give Brandon Bolden's spot or James O'Shaughnessy's spot to one of these other young guys. Maybe Bolden comes off the roster, Austin Carr goes on, O'Shaughnessy comes off, Hollister goes on. Basically, when you really look at it, and let's take Tom Brady out of this equation for a second, there's a lot of turnover that's coming up on some of these key spots on the Patriots team that other than the quarterback position. Ninkovich is already retired. Patrick Chung is another name. Julian Edelman is going to be 32 after this season. Nate Solder, we've talked about that situation a lot. Danny Amendola, another guy. All of these guys that, you know, I had making my initial 53 are kind of potential replacements for a lot of those guys. Obviously, Hollister is more thinking long-term about Gronk's health. We got to think about that. You can't just, you can't just ignore the fact that Rob Gronkowski playing 18, 19 games in a season at this stage of his career with all the injuries that he's had. Let's be honest, it might be unrealistic for that to happen. Nate Solder, obviously you have to have the young tackles on this roster. You have to have Tony Garcia, and I think you have to have McDermott on there too, because Nate Solder is gone, and I think that, or, you know, might be gone. And I think that we all know that Waddle and Fleming are not the answers there. Austin Carr, everyone's like, okay, well, what's he going to do on the team in 2017? Going to carry 6-7 wide receivers to keep this guy. But Julian Edelman and Danny Amendola are no spring chickens, you know. Edelman, we expect to be here for one more year after this one. I think what they just signed through 2019. So expected him to be here a couple more years. But Danny Amendola, I think retirement is coming real close, real soon for Danny Amendola. Austin Carr is an obvious replacement for Danny Amendola. And then Rob Ninkovich, Harvey Lange is the obvious replacement there. Basically what I'm saying is that if you don't turn the back end of this roster a little bit and kind of prepare for some of these older guys retiring or moving on or whatever it may be, you're going to be stuck with a roster that is supremely talented, don't get me wrong, but is also very veteran heavy. Didn't have a huge draft class. They only had 4 picks in this last draft. And when you look at some of this of the other positions, you're going to be stuck with a team that is getting older. And, that's okay in some respects. You know, obviously Belichick and Brady are getting older, so you want to get as much out of those guys as you possibly can here down the stretch run of their careers. But overall, I think that it's underestimating how Bill Belichick views this in terms of those last couple of roster spots, 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, that range right there. To me, I would just much rather have the young guys on the roster and give them a chance to kind of, play and get that experience where hopefully they could be, a Rob Ninkovich replacement in Harvey Lange or a Danny Amendola in Austin Carr or Tony Garcia becomes the left tackle, stuff like that. And, I think that that's underestimating that aspect of it just to say, let's put Shane McClellan on this team. Shane McClellan, let's also not forget, is a lot more expensive than Harvey Lange is right now, and he's older. And he's probably not much better, honestly. Harvey Lange is a guy that I think could immediately do what Shane McClellan did last year. Shane McClellan last year was garbage. He was not good. I watched his tape again because everyone's telling me he's going to make this roster, and I just don't see it. I don't see why he has to make this roster. Not saying that he necessarily won't, But Harvey Lange, in my opinion, could be Shea McClellan from 2016 quite easily. Yeah. You know, what do you think about all that?
I think your general premise here is the right one, is that when Belichick looks at a roster, he doesn't look at it just in 1 year. He looks at it 2-3 years down the line as well. So when it comes to players and making sure the roster is not so old, you know, in the coming years, that's how he thinks. So I think that general premise of making sure that you're not with the roster that, you know, is full of 33-year-olds or whatever. So I feel like, yeah, I have to get younger. I'm not sure where, what spots you get younger. I do feel like, yeah, if for me, if it's between Lange and McClellan, I want Lange, because I do think he was one of the guys who didn't really stand out necessarily against Jacksonville, but I liked what I saw. And I like what I see more and more out of Lange as these practices and games progress. I think he's going to be a good player. I don't know necessarily know if you're going to have to make that choice between those two guys. The way Karen's 53 broke down, they were able to keep both. But I do believe, though, in general, you're right. I think you want to get younger. And so, like, when it comes to O'Shaughnessy and Hollister, that's clear to me right now. I'd rather have Hollister. But, you know, O'Shaughnessy, we'll see. But he's got – I mean, the O'Shaughnessy guy's got to get healthy.
Yeah.
You know, he's got to get on the field and prove that he can play. But, yeah, I think in general, yeah, that's the right thing. You for as much as you want guys who are proven and everything like that, you also want to, you know, re-up these guys with younger talent. It is a young man's game to a certain extent. You want guys who have upside. You want guys who have a future on this team, but more than just a couple years. So yeah, in general, I'd agree with that assessment.
Yeah, I just feel, they have so many veterans play at the top of the roster that are going to play a whole lot. And, you know, you might as well just keep some of these back-end spots as kind of tryout, more or less, spots for some of these younger guys that were UDFAs or whatever, and just see what they have throughout the course of the season. Because, honestly, you know, what is Shea McClellan bringing to the table? Brandon Bolden, you know, I love Brandon Bolden. He's been a great contributor on special teams. All that stuff is great. But if it means that we're going to keep Brandon Bolden on this team and they're not going to keep a guy like an Austin Carr, I just don't see how that's advantageous to the team now or in the future. You know, other than the fact that Brandon Bolden can play on special teams. I mean, lots of guys can play on special teams. You know, I just feel like you want to keep the back end of the roster fresh. You don't want it to be stale. You don't want it to be these veteran guys that are probably making a little bit too much money that, you know, are just not really producing very much for you at the back end of the roster. You'd much rather keep it young, keep it fresh, and recycle it a little bit and turn it over every single year. You know, obviously you're going to have the same, you know, 30 to 40 guys as your, you know, go-tos, as your locks, so to speak. But you want at the back end of the roster to kind of keep things flowing and keep it fluid and sub some guys in and take some guys out. And, you know, Shea McClellan had his chance. You know, he had all of last year. They gave him every single opportunity possible last year to flash, to show them something, to make a role for himself on this team, and he didn't really do it. And I think that Harvey Lange could easily step into that role and probably produce just about the same as McClellan did last year. You know, a number of guys are you know, have that going for them right now. But my second, I guess, 53 man, or initial one here of the preseason, I gave the spots to the young guys because I think they've earned it. you know, Belichick talks about it all the time. You know, it's a competition. You got to go out and earn your spot. Everybody's got to go out and earn their spot from 1 to 53. You know, obviously Tom Brady would tell you that too. And we know that that's a crock, but you know, everybody's got to go out there and earn your spot. And what has McClellan done from the sideline? Really? He's been hurt. What has James O'Shaughnessy done? He's also been hurt. What are some of these other guys? You know, Bolden's really the only guy that you can argue, okay, he flashed in the game, so he deserves, you know, a longer look. Some of these other guys, you know, see you later. I mean, you've had your chances. They've put you in plenty of different situations to try to succeed, and you just haven't. But that's my two cents on that, but I just wanted to ask you your opinion there. But Adam, what do you got coming up this week and going on?
Well, mostly this week I'm mostly on the desk just editing stories, so I'm not going to be
– Exciting stuff.
I'm not down – yeah. So I'm, which is fine. I'm not down there or anything like that. I'll be doing a lot of on-site stuff next week. But this week I'll mostly just be reading Jeff and Karen and game and seeing what happens. And then I got my sister-in-law's wedding on Sunday. Again, so that will be the last wedding of this summer, a big wedding type summer for me. It'll be you know, I won't be able to give any real impressions on practice or anything like that because I won't be down there. But obviously, be reading up on it and just anxious to see what the team looks like. And I also kind of really want to see more of Deshaun Watson on the other side of it. I thought he looked pretty decent for a first try last week. And so I'm curious to see how quickly he rises on that depth chart. I know they sort of like Savage, but I watched Watson's clearly more talented than Tom Savage. Like, clearly.
He just brought something to the – as soon as he came in the game, the offense just kind of had a spark under it.
Right. And so I think we'll see him start. I don't know when, but at some point this season.
These rookie quarterbacks, you know, obviously it's not Patriot-related really, but these rookie quarterbacks really first go-around, some good dress rehearsals. You know, a lot of them really looked really good. Kizer, Trubisky – Watson, obviously,
Mahomes,
yeah, some, you know, some guys turning some heads already. I mean, Cleveland's ready to call Deshaun Kizer the Lord and Savior. So I mean, you know, there's a lot of that going on around the league. But I think this is really good, a good week for the Patriots to go down to Houston, a really good Houston Texans team. Obviously, we can debate whether or not they're, you know, even close to the Patriots level right now, but and, you know, really good defense that's going to be one of the better defenses in the league. And offensively, they have some really talented players. We obviously know what the Patriots think of guys like DeAndre Hopkins, for example, who they've tried to pry away from Houston a couple times, I believe. So, you know, a bunch of really good competition is going to happen in the next week for the Patriots in Houston, which I think is a big part of why, even though they play Houston this season, in the regular season, and might play them in the playoffs. A big reason why they agreed to these joint practices anyways was because it's going to be really good competition for a lot of different players because Houston has some really good players as well.
Yeah, and I think it's another week where you can look at, okay, what do these tackles bring to the table? You know, what can we see out of
boy. Adrian Waddle versus Jadeveon Clowney, is that what you're telling me right now?
Yeah, exactly. So, let's it's a test, you know, like, it, you know,
stay safe, Jimmy, stay safe. Exactly. That's all I gotta say. All right, for me though, I got another Making the Leap candidate coming down. I'm gonna do one on Eric Rowe, who I think is really primed to have a pretty big year and become kind of a household name beyond New England this year. if he gets the playing time, that is. But I think he's a good one. 53-man roster projection is up if you're looking for that kind of thing. Also have a review of Jimmy Garoppolo's night from last Thursday as well. But, you know, a bunch of stuff in the Herald. Not sure exactly what's going to be coming, but there's plans for some regular season stuff once that gets underway. Not much of a preseason stats guy, so that this kind of is a lull in that respect. But there's some good ones coming up for the regular season. Some records the Patriots are going to be set to break and stuff like that. But we'll get into that. And then next week, Adam, we're going to get a guest on. That's my goal.
Yeah.
For next week, we're going to have somebody with us. Folks, next week, a guest of some sort. We're not going to say who quite yet, but we're going to do our best, and we'll go from there. But for Adam Kirchin, Evan Lazar, thanks for listening to the Naked Bootleg Podcast.
All right.